How is everybody's day going so far? Who's gonna be the first person to talk?
Outstanding.
Outstanding? Good.
Yeah,
What
man.
outstanding?
I got some friends who are in ill health stem cell treatment today here in San Jose Cliff region.
No way.
I'm sitting on my butt waiting for the Uber because I get back to the hotel to do cardio for dinner. So right in front of the World Gym.
Okay.
Good place.
Yeah, very, very cool. A lot of people are getting that done, man. Like a lot of people are having a lot of success. I know that Andrew, one of our coaches, he just went and got it done or is getting it done. I think he should have. I think he's done right now. I'm not sure if Andrew's gonna be on the call tonight or not. Yeah.
Because one of the other clients from MI today, and he seems to be had great. I think his name was Andy. Don't check me on that. But he seemed to be doing great after 2 or 3 weeks. It's a stunning result people got. I had it done in February.
Is it painful?
And the site injections aren't fun, right? I had my hip that's kind of shitty, so there was a 6-inch needle. That wasn't fun. But the stuff in the shoulders, the IV drip is just like a little tiny IV. It's not a big gauge needle. And even
Okay.
the shots in the shoulders, they numb up pretty good. Today I had some, they call Procaine, which is supposed to be a neuro. It helps the nerves function better if you got some sites of injury. Took all the pain out of my knee and all the pain out of my shoulders, which I've been fighting with. But I
Great.
don't know how long that lasts.
Yeah, exactly. That's interesting, man. Super, super interesting also to think just about how the application would be for people who've had like tears and acute injuries versus like soft tissue deformation or just like even, which is more psychological, but even like localized pain that could just be more just as like a thing that a person's been dealing with chronically. You know, like that's really interesting. So a lot of pain is very real, but it's also very, well, all pain starts here, right? So it would just be interesting
All
to
right.
see how everybody reacts to it, right?
I mean, it's debilitating and depressing at times. And these
Yeah.
guys are like healing pancreases, hearts, soft tissue that, I mean, would have thought of as unfixable a
Right.
decade ago.
Yeah.
Pretty cool shit.
Yeah, super, super cool, man. Keep me up with that. I'd like to learn more.
Happy to.
How is
They
everything?
actually have got me in a position doing some sales for them now, so I can
Oh,
actually
really?
speak. Pretty, yes, as a result of Ben bringing me down here, it was a beautiful fit.
That's super cool.
Yeah, man. I don't mean to be dominating the conversation. I'm going to mute.
No, please. I like the conversation. Other people are just still coming in anyways right now. So Cody, I see you
Okay.
there. Man. Who else is here that I see? Dez, I always see you in these calls, man. Thank you for showing up. Do we have anybody new?
He's got the Stratocaster in the background.
What was that?
There's a Stratocaster in the background.
Of who?
Guitar.
Talking about my guitars here.
There we go.
Yeah. That's awesome. What
Yeah,
kind is
they're
that?
just there for show. I'm not very good.
What kind is it, Cody?
That was just a Squire Strat Epiphone SG on the side. This is the new baby.
Nice.
Zach
Oh, Zach
Wild.
Wilde. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Nice to learn how to play.
One of my other clients, Eric. I'm not sure if he's on there. Eric, you here? He usually pops in. He has a bunch of cool guitars too. I got one on the wall here as well.
Yeah.
Strat that I picked up a little while back. Super cool stuff. We're all just a bunch of gearheads, aren't we? That's awesome. Al, you're new. Tell you sorry, somebody was saying that they didn't have access to the mic. You can talk, Al.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I gotcha. Who's your coach?
Coach Andrew, I just signed up just a few days ago, and I believe it's Coach Andrew who's on. I believe he's on vacation this week. But I'm actually going to start the program coming up soon. So he's back and I'll be starting soon, and I'm super pumped. I followed muscle intelligence and I've done foundation extreme several times. I think I started maybe the foundation maybe 8 years ago and have done it several times over the last several years, and I've just never actually had coaching. So this is a first for me, and I'm super pumped and really appreciative of the opportunity and looking forward to next steps.
Awesome, man. You're gonna have a great time. Andrew's a great guy too. There's well, you know, we always talk like, oh, your coach is the best, but like, you know, and I do believe that every single one of our coaches is amazing. But like, Andrew's just he's a special one, man. You'll have a great time with him.
Great. Great.
Is there anybody else on the call right now? Again, just feel free to just introduce yourself if this is your first call. Matt, I see you there. How you doing, Matt? I haven't talked to you in a while. Well, I talk to you all the time, but I haven't talked to you here.
Doing well, man. Doing well. Just
Those guys, I can't see your biceps.
catching them. They're there. Don't worry. They haven't gone anywhere. They're just getting bigger day by day.
That's why we have to focus the camera here, because otherwise it would just be only biceps.
Just like leaned a little bit this way.
There.
He comes in.
Wait, that looks like an expensive
I'll
shirt.
extend the biceps challenge to anybody on the call. If they're coming to Costa Rica, we can compare who's got the best peak, if that's your type of thing.
Have you ever measured? Have you actually measured your biceps? How big are they?
I don't know, man. I actually don't know. But last time that I did measure them, I think with a pump, I can get them like 1 inch bigger with a pump. And I think they were like 19 and change.
Let anybody tell you that 1 inch doesn't matter, okay?
As
Absolutely does.
far as anybody else who's new on the call, obviously welcome Al. He just spoke. Al's going to kick things off with Coach Andrew on June 3rd, I believe, approximately. And then I'm just looking around here, and it looks like everyone else is a part of the community. Kurt, great to see you here. Thank you for tuning in.
How's it going?
Yeah, so guys, if I'm
Yeah,
sure.
and James is actually kicking things off with Andrew as well. This is going to be his first community call.
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
What's up, James? Welcome.
How are you?
Hey, man.
Doing well, brother. Doing well. Thank you for tuning in.
Yeah, so I'll continue to let people in. Probably can start right now. So guys, like, I got asked to the call tonight. I think that Greg had a schedule issue, so we kind of switched weeks. And I was going to talk to you about some exciting stuff that I've been incorporating in my own coaching, training, and like just processes that we've been kind of like working on here at MI to really just bring out results in a more streamlined, but also just a, how do I describe it? Like, I don't want to say, yeah. Like, it's just a very, very exciting and nuanced approach. Let's say it like that. Because the cool things that we're experimenting with is just obviously, like, it's coming out in the research. It's very, very new. But also, it's been proven time and time again now. So it's almost becoming unarguably the way to build lean mass, which is super cool. And again, me and Matt, we're always in cahoots. So, this will be almost like I'm just, you're like, I know this, I know this. And you'll kind of resonate with this really well. But yeah, so one of the first things I wanted to go off over before I kind of get into that is like in MI, us coaches, we always talk about we talk about you guys a lot in a good way. Like, we always talk about you guys celebrating the wins and how everybody's like kicking butt and doing certain things really well. And then we also talk about where our clients seem to constantly struggle, or where we see the similar struggles or the similar patterns. And so what I've been trying to think about is like, what could I do as a coach better? Because I'm always trying to think like that. Like, I probably think too much. Probably not unlike anything else in this call. I know Cody, you're probably always thinking. So at least me and you have that in cahoots, right? And you start thinking too much about your clients, but it's a good thing because you're always trying to find solutions. And so I'm thinking, it's like, what is an approach or a standardized system that I could come up with that would deliver consistent results, or at the very, very least, get my clients and every single person that I work with to have a complete understanding of the process so that they have faith that their action items daily are going to get them to a specific result. And I think that if I could give my clients that kind of power every single day, then I think that would be ultimately the best thing in the world, to know that you have complete power over your actions, and then therefore you know those actions will yield a result. Now, it might not be 19-inch Matt's biceps in a day, but it could be over a year, and that's the cool thing. It could be over 6 months, and we can't control, like, you can't manage those expectations, but we can manage the process to get you to what your body's absolutely capable of delivering.
Can I add something, Stevie?
Yeah, please. I didn't know you're there.
So every challenge we experience in life, every inability to follow through seems to be rooted in the same su subset of problems, subset of behavioral problems. So, and there's actually somebody on this call. I just see him there. He explains this better than I can. But we have these amygdala-based responses that are primal. They're very fast. They're very instinctual. They're very oftentimes tied into either habit or stress. So we have this like this fast thinking brain. It's very reactive. It does things that are ultimately evolutionary, right? It's fornication. It's procreation. It's eating. It's eliminating stress. And then we have this other brain that's a little bit slower, that takes a little bit more prefrontal cortex planning, intentional action. And the way that I explain this, or I simplify this, is like the more you reinforce one or the other, the easier it becomes. So that means no matter what I do, whether I'm trying to not eat chocolate, or I'm trying to do my cardio, or I'm trying to follow my workout plan, the more I can reinforce the planning, following through part of my brain, the more that just becomes the way I act. That just becomes my default way of being. Conversely, the opposite is true. If you're falling short on things consistently, what you'll notice is you start to wire that in. You ever notice how people, as they get old, oftentimes start to get more fearful, more cynical, more skeptical, more angry? They have all these primal emotions. They're no longer training themselves to use their prefrontal cortex, their executive center. They're not thinking logically, rationally, and working toward goals. They just become this like reflexive and reactive version of themselves. So what I'm getting at is, no matter how small your daily actions, try to make them intentional, try to make them premeditated, try to schedule your day. And the more you can adhere to these schedule, the more you can adhere to these planning and following through type actions, ritualistic actions, the more you can rewire your brain to not be like a squirrel trying to catch a nut, right? So how many of you guys, and this is a great test, how many of you guys, if you sat down in meditation, would say, I can't. I'm not able to meditate. Anybody? Maybe you'd get in meditation, you'd sit for 5 or 10 minutes and be like, oh, I'm kind of scratchy, I'm kind of itchy, I have all these other things happening. So that's your primal instinctual brain happening. That's the amygdala response. It's like, I'll get me out of here, I can do this, I can do that. In that moment, you have the ability to rewire your brain and say, yes, I feel this desire to do something other than what I'm doing. I feel this desire to scratch my nose, pick my ear, whatever, but I'm going to choose not to. And every time I can rewire that conscious decision to not succumb to the instinctual, unconscious, whatever the desire is, you reinforce the more effective version of yourself, no matter what the situation is. So I encourage you guys all to realize that we're all on the same journey. We're all trying to create what I'll say is the highest functional capacity that we can. What that really means is, where the rubber meets the road is, I take on a task and I finish it. Most of you will start your day making your bed. That's a really small task. Someone who can make their bed and continue with their day is a full, low functional capacity. Someone who can take on enormous numbers of things, large tasks, and follow through as a high functional, very high functional capacity. So we're all on this continuum. Our goal should be, I set a goal, I follow through no matter how big or small. And then we build this functional capacity to the point where we become the type of person that we want to be, right? It's literally these baby steps moving in the direction of rewiring our brain, setting goals, following through, and eventually the goals become so big that our life is beyond our wildest imaginations. So that, Steve, while that may not directly sound like it's correlated to muscle and fat loss, it's everything, right? It's correlated to everything. So I'm curious if you guys have any thoughts or feedback, or Mr. Mitchell, if you have anything you want to add to that. Not that you have to, buddy.
No, but good to see you, brother. I'm glad I finally made one of these things.
Good to see you, brother.
Yeah, I would just say, I think that's perfectly in line with whatever I was going. So I was actually saying, like, in terms of the process I'm trying to make sure that I'm upholding is looking at it like a phase driven system, where we're taking every single person through a phase of building competence in these areas so that they can predict outcomes. Right. And if we look at the first thing is adherence. It's like we cannot predict any outcome if there's no adherence. And like in the training or in the coaching world, like if you take an example of writing a program, you talk about like the resistance profile of a bicep curl. Often you see on online, people are looking for the best plan, right? Like we've heard that a lot. You see it all the time. And like the best plan in first day is to get your butt in the gym. Like that's the best plan. Like doesn't matter what bicep curl you do, just go in there. You'll probably be more anabolic from walking through the door, right?
Yeah.
And so if we're thinking about gaining adherence, like we have to get adherence in things. And this might be more systems than you guys need to know, but we're trying to get adherence from you guys in your workouts, diet, nutrition, sleep, submitting check-ins, submitting videos, submitting all these things, because then the more information we get, the more we can help you understand that these things are tied towards logical progressions. Like as an example, when it comes out of videos, one of the reasons why I push it, it could be for some coaches, maybe adherence in terms of just like, I want to make sure we're in touch. But it also could be like, how's that movement progressing? Because in the first phase of our training, it's also about like skill acquisition and trying to make sure that we're improving your movement and your range of motion and your strength in certain areas. And so if we can see, let's just say like a hip airplane, and we're seeing that there's some lower back flexion, like you're rounding your back, you have a hard time getting the motion, then we keep on seeing videos, then either it's A, going to help us with regressional patterns that we could throw you guys, or it's going to help you see the progress that you're making so we can actually scale that up and move you into different phases. Does that make sense so far, guys? So the whole first phase is all about that, you know, again, adherence, and so we can predict outcomes. So then we can later move from like a phase one, let's say, into something that's more driven on skill. Because like, again, you can't, if you think about becoming like a magician, like you don't do a card trick once, you do it 1,000 times. Like what's that adage, like the whole 10,000 hours creates a master. Like we got to get that in the short amount of time. So how do we do that? We practice the skill. We can't practice the skill if we don't have adherence. So if you think of skill, think about like multi-joint coordinational patterns in the gym that have a high yield. And so if we can get to a point when we have and adherence and everything is now assumed, the guy's hitting the diet, he's sleeping, he's doing all these things, we are on the runway track, then we can actually think about the getting into patterns that we can actually logically progress over time. Think about like challenging you guys for like, hey, are you logging your sets now? Are you tracking your weights? Are we able to review this with you? And the picture I want you guys to paint mentally right now is like, imagine how hard that would be to be able to talk about the logic behind even tracking your weights if there's no progression or there's no consistency. And consistency, again, it could be in the workouts, it could be in the same equipment, it could be in your environment. And that's why it's a very, very, it's more of a thought experiment, right? Because I think we all lack consistency in some area we're trying to get a hold of. Like I've had clients I've worked with for years and sometimes they're amazing. And sometimes they come in, they have a hard day at work. And what happens is their weight plummets because their stress downregulates their contractile capacity, right? Like this kind of stuff's very real. So we're trying to, again, create that groundhog day so we can be specific. I'm going to pause right there for 1 second just so I can open up. Because again, I said a lot of words. I want to see if you guys can kind of, you know, unpack this with me.
So let me give this some context because Steve did a great job explaining something. I'll give you guys some context. I have one client that comes to mind. His name's Matt Bennett. He's been with me for 2 years. He's never missed a workout, never missed a meal, never missed a supplement, never missed a check-in. Every single day I wake up, he trains at 5 a.m. every day. So every day I wake up, I have every single set he did that day in my Telegram. How do you think his results are? They're incredible, right? He's the client of the year last year. Conversely, we may have someone in this group who's like having a hard time completing their breakfast or having a hard time completing their cardio. And how do you think that person's results will be? And now it's not meant to point fingers and place blame. It's meant to say like, hey, this person, Matt Bennett, has a very high functional capacity. We can give him a huge amount of responsibility. He holds it. This person over here may have a hard time holding those responsibilities, and it's not their fault, right? It's not your fault. How many of you guys have done something this week that was off plan or like, you're like, shit, I failed at that. I fucked up. I made a mistake in the last 7 days. Anybody? Yeah, probably everyone, right? And so what's happening in those moments is you're reverting back to this instinctual primal brain that's like, I need to get out of stress. I need to feel better. I want to, you know, this thing is going to give me a little boost of dopamine, whether it be food or whatever, training. And in that moment, you must adhere to your plan. So there's a book that I've suggested a thousand times that everyone should read. It's called The Tools. One quote that I've extracted from The Tools is, the worse you feel, the more committed you become to your protocol. So when you're feeling those days of challenge or lacking adherence or having a hard time following through, like Steve was saying, you must look at your protocol and adhere. Because every time you think about it, it's almost this ultimate anti-fragility. It's like, the worse I feel, the more I commit. So the worse I feel, the more I commit. Instead of the worse I feel, the less I commit, which causes this slippery slope. If I feel less likely to, or less wanting to do my stuff, that's when I must be perfect. Because then I'm creating the habit of, it only gets better. Because even when you're feeling bad, it gets better. And feeling good, it gets better. So it's this cumulative benefit.
It all kind of catches momentum too, right? Like the how we see it in the coaching. Because like if we can logically take somebody from a point where they have previously lacked adherence in all these different things and make those things Groundhog Day, then we can progress into, again, complicated patterns that now are simply tackleable, because we can predict outcomes, which is such a cool thing to see when you actually are in the coaching chair, like this chair I have right here, watching my clients like skyrocket. And then where we ultimately want to get is like to what we would call like an optimization phase. I want you guys to think about how like that's just more something that you guys have an opportunity to be hyper specific. And like, what is the goal right now? Is the goal like purely weight loss? Or is it like, let's turn you into like the most lean, jacked version that you can represent of yourself? Because then again, you've obviously gained the skill in those motions that are going to lend towards crazy adaptations later. But again, everything's on Groundhog Day. So we have this ability now to assume that everything will logically progress, because we don't have to manage those other issues. So what I found lately, and this is why this has been on my mind, is that when I'm thinking of my training, I'm thinking about how like I'm able to do certain things in my own workouts, because I have that nailed down. I've just like, you know, that's just a part of my life. It's been a part of my life a long time. So I'm able to like, that's taken care of. And that's neither good nor bad. It's just the thing is like, that's where I'm able to be. So I can be like, hey, I can do these things. And somebody else will then ask and like, well, can I do that plan? I'm like, I wouldn't suggest it, because you wouldn't be able to predict these things. Like, man, like I had a friend who just had a kid. Like, that's a very real thing. Like right now your brain is in maintenance mode, whether or not you want to think about it. Right. So when we're getting into that hyper specific position, I think it really matters for people to ultimately have a really clear goal and vision. And when I say goal, I don't mean aspiration. And I often tell people, it's like an aspiration is like, I would love to have an Aston Martin in my driveway, but I will do nothing to go get it. Okay. That's an aspiration. Goal is like, I'm going to put on 10 pounds lean mass next 3 months. It's going to happen. Right. And it's like, let's talk about how we can reverse engineer that process so you can make sure you get there. And somebody else might be having combative like goals where they would like, and I know we talk about like gaining lean mass and, you know, getting completely sculpted, and it is possible 100%. But I do find that when people are often leaning on both goalposts, it's almost like it's more of a product of indecision, and they're not really clear where they want to go yet. So it's like something that I would encourage you guys to maybe just use as a thought experiment for yourself. Be like, where do I want to go? Because when we look at this hyper-specific way of programming and coaching a person through it, like the cool things that you can do to gain lean mass and how that product can be, you know, revealed to you on that end, is a completely different experience than if you were to say, I want to get lean. It is a completely different experience. So again, I'm going to pause there, because what I'm going to kind of chat after this is kind of where I'm going with stuff in my life that I thought would be worth sharing. So like, how are you guys feeling in your own training? Where do you guys feel stuck in any areas? I'd like to talk about this for 2 seconds. Keith, you're always a good, you know, talker for this kind of stuff. How do you feel you are? If you were to think about where you are right now, if you were to say like phase one is about adherence, phase two is about skill acquisition, and phase three is about optimization, where do you feel you are?
I think phase two, I think, but you might correct me if I'm wrong. I think what I just was really thinking about is your goals versus aspiration. I think I think workout wise, I'm fine. I think nutrition wise, I'm not, Andrew probably shares with you guys, and I always say like, I'm never as good on, like, I've been working out 25 odd years. It's not a problem. Tell me when, where, whatever it is, I'll do it. The nutrition, I'm still not as tight on, because I think it's a behavioral shift and it's all these kind of things that we're talking about. And I think in my head, working out, building muscle, that's a goal. You tell me what I've got to do. I know I can do it. I've got the skills. I've got the learning. I've got the knowledge. I can do that. The nutrition and those kind of parts, that's still in my head, is still a bit of an aspiration. It's like, I think subconsciously, and I've probably talked about this a few times, it's that thinking that the food's going to be the path, or the way I eat, the timing, all that is the path to adding to that, is still like, it's not an acquired skill for me. I can't make that direct connection in my head. So it's not bad, but touching on what Ben said before, it's not 100%. And for me, that side of it is still, I'm still kind of using the stick on myself, and Andrew uses the stick on me. It's like, I need that push. Like, I need that reminder. I need to shift that behavior that, yes, yeah, stay tight, stay tight, stay tight, rather than, you know, I know if I go and do bench press, my chest is going to improve. Like, and it's building that link in my head on a subconscious level, and I'm still trying to drill that in. And I think that's, yeah, I don't know if that sounds like level two or level one. Well,
I think what I would just give you, just from what I'm hearing, is like, from my perspective, is that in how I've seen my own life, like, you can be in multiple phases in different areas of your life. You know what I mean? Like, you might have certain things just nailed. They're never a question. And I think that would speak for a lot of people, right? Some people just you have to tear them away from the gym. I've had some guys who can't eat right to save their life. And then I'm like, stop training. And they just won't stop training. And they'll just keep going. It's like, that is just so rooted. And then you look at something else, and then it's the exact opposite. So I would instead be like, okay, if we have that thing, we can't lie. We're going to talk to you about how, like, that will affect results. No different than if you're saying, hey, I want to build, like, you know, I want to build some Ben Pekulski legs. And then you're like, but I don't want to train legs. Well, it's like, we have a problem. Like, that's probably going to be in the way. So let's talk about that, right? But I think that we're unaware more often about how often we all do that. Like, we all sometimes do that. Like, I want to have this. And then we are given the action item, and it's like, yeah, I can't do that. So that doesn't mean you're not going to get it eventually. It doesn't mean you're not going to get some results. It just means we have to talk about dialing back expectations or timeline, right? And just think about that and how that might help you kind of weave through the things that you might individually struggle with, right?
100%. Yeah, I think it is that, you make a good point, is that it is the dial. Like, it's that, it's not bad. I know my nutrition is not bad, but the dial's got to go up. And it's not like, yeah, I throw another weight on, do another rep, do another set. It's like, no, actually not doing that, not touching that, having more of this, having less of that. And it's that cause and effect in my head, and going, yeah, if I don't do that, my brain, and it's exactly what Ben was saying before, it's those old behaviors. It's, well, it's, you know, this is just what you do. And I think it's, there's the simplicity in doing what you've always done, not this instant action now is taking you another step towards your goal. Stick on it, like, really drive it, really drill it into my head. So yeah, it's definitely a work in progress for me at the moment, but it's baby steps. Yeah.
So yeah. Here's my question to everybody on the group. Are you living objectively or are you living subjectively? This is a question, and there's no right and wrong. Well, let's explore it. So what I'm saying is there's no right amount of time that you live objectively and subjectively. Certain areas of your life can be objective and other areas can be subjective. The more areas that you have that are living objectively, the more likely you are to achieve your goals. What does objective mean? It's measured, right? Objectives, measurables. Subjective is based on feeling, based on, we'll call it intuition or impulse. And so how many of you guys can say, actually, instead of asking a question, why don't you take a subjective analysis of your life right now and say, what areas am I living objectively? And what areas am I living subjectively? And then just take a personal inventory to see if your results reflect the objective and subjective nature. Meaning, if I'm living objectively, does that area of life tend to have a little bit more effective results? If I'm living subjectively, does that team? And so there's a reason I'm kind of squishy about the way I'm saying this. There's value in living subjectively in some areas of your life in some circumstances, right? Sometimes it's nice to, like, let off the goal-driven, objectively measured brain, the very kind of left dominant brain. There's value in that. There's value in just chilling out. I'm like, I'm just going to go with the flow. But it should, ironically, it should be scheduled and calculated. like the days when I'm going to have absolutely nothing on my calendar and just live by the seat of my pants, that's great. That's an important part of the dynamic balance of life, right? Allowing your brain to go, I'm going to allow my brain to be creative and free, right? Whereas if we're trying to move toward a goal, creativity and freedom may not, I mean, it could support some goals, but in general, what we're talking about, the objective living, the objective brain is going to support you a lot more effectively with finances, with physical optimization, living objectively. Does everyone understand what I mean when I say living objectively versus subjectively? Yeah. So what does living objectively require as its first necessity? Goals, targets, daily plan, taking action. And that's why we're here. That's why we're here. So I assume you all have very clear goals. If you don't start, and if you don't get with your coach, if you don't have a daily action plan, get one. And so as the coaching team, we lean in on just 5 daily habits that if we accomplish these every single day, non-negotiable, that we're going to accomplish our goal. And those change, right? Let's say we have a 3-month goal. My top 5 daily habits today may be different than they are in 90 days because they should be building on each other. But my encouragement to you all is, what are your 5 daily non-negotiables that are directly moving in the direction of your goals? Every one of you must have those in order to be successful. Some of them can be really, really large. Some can be really, really small. But the small ones stack, right? We start small, we get bigger because we start to develop belief in ourselves. I know I've talked about this before, but I want to reinforce for anyone who's newer. I think it's just such an important part of who we are as men. Set a mission, set an objective, go get it. And hold your commitments. That was my quote that I just dropped in the chat.
Hi, Ben. I think this is kind of like this really resonates with me, that kind of this call, just because I kind of started a journey 3 years ago trying to get to being a scratch golfer. And the first kind of like 6 to 12 months, I kind of like never like half-assed it, but like was kind of just running into similar problems like Keith was talking about, some like nutrition stuff and not applying it in certain situations. And it was only kind of maybe like till 2 years ago I started like kind of dialing in the needle, doing daily mobility every single day. But it was kind of just like my coach would tell me, look, there's only one way that you can like make this achievable is by doing daily mobility. So then I kind of built on that and then just tried to increase daily habits. And I got to a stage where, I don't know, you're obviously familiar with muscle activation. I'd like to hear your view on that as well. That was the kind of program that was based around for 2 years. And then I kind of went from a stage where I was kind of half-assing a little bit then to kind of wanting a little bit more. And that's kind of like what's brought me to muscle intelligence. And I've been doing the daily mobility program. And I was always like kind of scared to do like squats and all that sort of stuff just because I was scared of injuring myself because I wasn't strong in these ranges of motions. And now Andrew's got me on squats and I've been doing that for the last 2 months. It's probably the best I've felt mobile wise. And now I'm at a stage where I'm starting to try and get like planning in and kind of taking care of my emotions. Like Keith was talking about, is trying to dial in like how to be focused and how to like be present in situations.
So here's some feedback for you, Des, on mobility work. Do you know the single best way to improve your mobility is not stretching? It's stretching. It's an important, useful tool, but it's not the best way to improve your range. The best way to improve your range is to strengthen the range, because your brain will tighten up as a protective mechanism if it senses instability. So our goal is we have to create end range stability. How do we create end range stability? Not by stretching. Stretching can create a decreased sensation, decreased kind of motor sensation from the primary motor cortex to the muscle. Muscle activation, specifically in short and lengthened ranges, actually specifically shortened ranges, is the by far the most effective way to improve mobility. Because it's really about getting into those end ranges and learning how to contract there. So I get exponentially better mobility outcomes from intelligent, effective training than I ever have from yoga. I use yoga as for a completely different reason. I think yoga is a side benefit is mobility, but it's not the primary reason. So just some context for you.
Yeah, I kind of went from like 2 months ago before I started here, from not being able to like do a lunge to like stand on one foot. Like I would like lose, just had no stability in my ankles and my quads and my hamstrings. And now I've added like weight and everything feels like it's just starting to align, like we're walking and all that sort of stuff. So I'm feeling the changes pretty drastically, even just in the last 2 months. So thanks to everyone for that so far.
Thank you, man. Michael, how are you, man? Anything you want to share? There's only one Michael on here. So if you're wondering if I'm calling on you, you're the only one. Michael, anything you want to share? I don't know if you, no? Michael doesn't know I'm talking to him.
I don't think so.
Cool. Anything else you guys want to chat about? Any other questions come up? Stevie, do you want to continue? Something else you wanted to wrap on?
Well, what I was actually going to say was what you were talking about, just that is what it just made me think right on the spot about how one of the reasons why this whole system became so important to me to really make sure that I was devising it and also fulfilling upon it was it's really about expectations, right? Because I find that, and this is really, really noticed. I noticed this with my personal one-on-one training was that, when somebody comes in expecting something and they're not given new information or understanding of the process and the why is huge, right? The why is big. Then what happens is like, you can do amazing things, but achievement, like your expectation of that achievement was different. And then because of that, you don't celebrate the reward, right? Because you're expecting something else. And so what that means, this means in terms of the process is like, again, if we have in the first phase the adherence, right? And we haven't had, as the coaches, the guts, or even just, we haven't put it in our plan to have a conversation about the things we're seeing and the intention behind the program with our clients to actually say, like, we need to conquer this right now. So like, yeah, you might get some results in these areas. You might get some hypertrophy, you might get some of this, but that is not our goal. Our goal is to get adherence here, right? So anything past that's gravy. I love it. But that is massively important because then we talk about how we need to lean in on that so that we can. And the whole like so that premise is massive because again, everything in bodybuilding, everything in life and fitness is you're always stacking behaviors, right? And you end up, I think Ben said before, like you might not like cardio, but you want to have the goal of having 8% body fat. So therefore now you like cardio. Why? Because it gets you there, right? It's the process. So you fall in love with the process because the end result. And it's the process that ends up making the thing enjoyable anyways. But same thing, like we progress the skill in these motions so that we can get to a point where you can predict hypertrophy. And that's how people get so good at it. And if you're thinking though, that like, if you're in a place where you're in this space, almost like you were talking about Des, where you're kind of like almost, twisting your hair about something that you're stuck in, then we're in this position almost like we're expecting to get good at something, but we're not realizing that's not the goal right now. The goal is actually to gain competence in this area. Then we need to conquer that so we can move on. And then once we've done that, then we can be like, yeah, now we're in a good place. And I have clients like that where it's like, we've conquered 1, 2, 3, and that now we're on 3. We're in phase 3. And it's like, go. And so a good analogy is like we're in a place where the analogy would be like a car at a racetrack. Like you're not spinning tires. You put the gas down, you connect and you go. And otherwise what's happening is a lot of times you're spinning tires, right?
So I didn't do like any cardio either for like the last year and a half or 2 years. So that obviously has had an influence on quite a bit of performance wise. And I think also like the beauty of being on the program is that you kind of like, you get kind of guided through it by like check-ins daily. Like if you've got a question, you kind of get answered pretty quickly. And I think that's the beauty of it, is the kind of guidance thing. It doesn't feel that you're kind of like on your own, like trying to find out information from here, there and everywhere and getting conflicting information. You're kind of on the journey with someone, which kind of makes a huge difference in execution, in my opinion.
Yeah. And you know what, man? Like, again, you're just bringing up all these thoughts in my brain. So please don't ever stop showing up to calls, please. Because I always like making these, right? But like that alone, I'm always amazed about how much of the process in coaching unveils itself when you get to a massive amount of communication. And I think it's a problem with alpha personality styles, I think, because every single person wants to do it themselves. They're like soldiers. I have a lot of soldier clients who are just like, they just think instinctively to go it themselves and retain it. And I have to consistently tell them, I'm like, prod, hey man, you're not alone. I'm in your corner. I need to know this stuff. And they're like, I know, but I didn't think it was a big deal. Like I had a client who like, heck, he was dealing with back issues. And he's like, I didn't think it was a big deal. I'm like, what would be like, if that's not like, what is like, you're just walking around with like, oh, and then you're in a cane trying to do squats. Like what's going on here? Right. And so having this, it just opens up so much. And I've seen people who might perceive the coaching is like, then like a wading pool for kids, right? That's as deep as it is. And then people, when they get into it and start, you know, communicating, fulfilling all these things, videos, check-ins, like you said, like it's a check-in. It can just be like to some person, it's just a piece of paper you're filling out, bunch of yeses, bunch of nos, send, right? Somebody else, it's a communication stream that opens possibilities. And then those possibilities create eventualities, right? And those eventualities make you a different person in a year. And it's the coolest thing in the world. It's the coolest thing in the world.
I kind of like, oh, that's something that I kind of noticed with like golf coaching. Like my coach, he's a really good coach, obviously. And he like, but it takes like maybe like 3 or 4 days for him to reply sometimes. So then when that happens, your kind of brain's thinking about other things during that process. So then you can maybe go down a different avenue instead of getting like the answer kind of straight away. And you could be compounding an error that you've kind of just created in your head, as opposed to getting the answer there and then you can implement that straight away. It's what I've noticed about golf, because golf, I mean, a million different things you can think about. And obviously with movement patterns as well and training, you can do that as well.
Yeah. So we've talked before about sucking at things, like how you have to kind of lean into the suck and have to do things that you're not good at. So again, Olympic weightlifting for me, right? Like you never don't suck. It is suck. You suck. That's just the nature of it. And it's like, you get better, but it's almost like you just do a little bit not bad. You just do that forever. But it's a good thing, because like you start, you get to think about these things and you get the right brain for it, like you do with golf, obviously, right? Then you're able to actually think like, what is it that I can actually progress upon and how can I get to the bottom of this? And you can use it as a problem solving system. And again, it's a thought experiment, right?
Yeah. And the problem is once you move like one thing, like that just like changes the whole movement pattern altogether in golf, which makes it 10 times worse as well. Same with lifting as well.
Yeah. I've never golfed, man, but I've had a lot of my friends and clients talk about golf and I'm like,
stupid game. Don't play it.
Ben, did you ever golf?
Man, I was golfing last week in Portugal with Dan, and we had an incredible time, an incredible round. It was so much fun. I golfed a lot when I was a high school kid. I golfed a couple months ago in Mexico, so I get out a couple times a year.
That's awesome. Yeah, I never did it, man. I was never into that kind of stuff. So yeah, guys, is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about? Because the other topic I was going to talk about would be much longer than what we have left, and I don't want to get into it without having the time to actually properly unfold that kind of stuff. So it's definitely something I would love to be invited on the call to chat about in another time. But right now, I'd love to open it up to Q&A. So anybody who's having any thoughts, or you know, if this whole conversation about the process that we're trying to deliver and consistently get better at, if this maybe sparked any thoughts about your own, you know, spot in the system, I'd love to hear about it.
Hey Kurt, would you be opposed to sharing some of your wisdom and insights on how you've made some breakthroughs in meditation? I know you've had some pretty great kind of evolution there. Any like tips or advice or guidance on that, so we can create that habit?
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's obviously changed from the way I did it years ago. I'll go back to what you mentioned earlier about how someone sits, but then the mind starts, you know, telling, oh, I've got to go do this thing or that. You know, it's like it's trying to disrupt the whole process of getting there and sitting still. And it's a natural thing. And unfortunately, one of the only ways to get through it is to stick there. And that's actually some of the value in it. A lot of people think they've got to sit there with no thoughts and all that good stuff. Well, there is a form of meditation just called the meditation of being, or natural meditation. And your whole purpose there, this is much like Zen meditation as well. It's you're just sitting. you're sitting. And what might help initially is doing what we call a one-pointed focus. Everybody here is familiar with breath work, probably of various types, but just getting one-pointed on something, like feeling the note, you know, breathing through your nose while you're meditating, and just feeling the air hit your nostrils as it goes in and out. And you stay on that. And you might have a thought come in, and you'll realize it. What my personal thing is, whenever a thought comes in, I literally go, thought. I just say thought, recognize it, and I go right back to feeling that breath on my nose. Some people, like the Zen monks, they'll have a candle in front of them. That's what they stare at. That's a visual cue. Some people repeat a mantra. But the bottom line is that one point of peace, what will happen? It's going to take a little while. It depends on, you know, how your mind works. But what's going to happen is after a while, the mind gives up. It does. You will sit there and do this. And eventually it's like, this guy's not fucking leaving. He is not going to go up and go turn on the TV, go out and do something else, whatever it may be. And it does get up. And that's when the money starts getting made in meditation. And much like what you guys have been discussing earlier about adherence, it's an adherence issue. You know, you got to go through that pain of letting that monkey mind learn it's not in charge, and that you are going to sit there and do this. And then that's when the benefits start reaping and you get in that area of stillness. So whenever I'm working with someone, I tend to have them do that one pointed aspect, either their breath, a mantra, or something like that, just because it's precluding anything else that's going on. You know, thoughts come in, you hear a car alarm outside, whatever it is, yet you note it, then you come right back to that breath or that mantra. And that teaches the disciplining aspect of it. And then what you'll find after a while is that you don't even, the time span will shorten between where that monkey mind is trying to mess with you and you can get into that place of stillness. And throughout the period, you know, it might come back, but it's, you'll find it's easier and easier to get back to that. And by the way, this is one of those things where when you're first starting out, you know, don't try to do marathon sessions or things like that. I mean, 5 minutes can be a marathon session for someone with a really highly active mind. But you can get to the point now. Most of my daily sessions are anywhere between 45 minutes to an hour. I'm getting ready to leave next week, by the way, Ben, for a whole week of it. Meditation retreat, silent retreat.
Where are you going?
It's going to be in a place called the Kentucky Castle. It's near Lexington, Kentucky. They got a big castle out there, and it should be pretty good, but I'm going to dive deep in that one.
Beautiful, man. Can't wait to hear
bottom line, though, is we're talking about adherence and discipline aspect to this and just sticking with it over time. It can be very frustrating. I mean, I know how it is, but the payoffs are very high. And quite frankly, this will it'll expand into other areas. You know, what happens in meditation is not the most important part. It's what you carry out of it with you. Less reactivity. You want to talk about discipline to do the things you're supposed to do, where he was talking about objective versus subjective. You'll just find more of a stillness and a less reactive nature. You're less likely to let that amygdala run the show and do things, because it really does help in separating that. It creates the pause between, do I go off diet or wait? You're there, you're in state, and you make the decision to go and do the right thing. I could talk about this for a long time, so I'll just leave it at that.
Thanks, man. So yeah, that you answered my question. The follow-up question I was going to ask is, like, what benefits have you seen in your life with the reactivity and the ability to be intentional? I mean, I can't think of anything more important in life, right? That not be reactive and actually be intentional to choose my words, choose my direction, choose my path. That might be the most useful cognitive skill that exists. I think there's an argument to be made for that. Thanks, Kurt.
And I was just going to say, and again, I love that, man. I was thinking about how much that resonated with me when I quit smoking. Because I told you before, I used to smoke. I was basically the person you never wanted to be around, right? And and like that's what I did. Like, I was like, whenever it happened, the craving, it was like, oh, craving. And I just like, that's a craving. I separated it from like, I want a cigarette, right? Because a lot of people are like, I'm stressed. they'll think about the problem they're having, and then they can't get out of it because the only way to fix the problem is to have the thing. So I just was like, oh, that's a craving because I'm an addict. That's it. And then it's like, okay, then it went away. And then happened again. It's like, oh, there you are. And then it's happened again. And just, yeah. So Kurt, how you're describing that, just it was like, it's very real.
Yeah. On that point too, here's a pro tip. It's also in the way we talk to ourselves. Like, you know, you noticed that it was a craving. It was something separate from you. A lot of people will say, you know, I'm craving this, or I'm depressed. And they're basically making an identity statement when they say I am, and then whatever X, Y, Z is. And for me, it's like, you know, the feeling of tiredness, whatever, something's going on. It's like, I'm not tired. The body's tired. And then it allows me to sit there and assess, okay, what's going on with the body? What would be going on here? Or, you know, I don't say I'm angry. It's like, something's coming up here. You know, what is it? I always separate stuff from this identity of myself. And it meditation, once again, it also helps with that as well. Starting to separate these things. So you're not, because the words matter. They do it to us subconsciously, psychologically, when we start inculcating these things.
Yeah, but how important is that, right? Because, like, I'm sure every single person on this call can say, like, you know, they're doing cardio. It's minute 29. What are you thinking? You're not like, can't wait. Like, there's some other thoughts going on. And so having that is really important.
Des is asking, how do you work around lack of external rotation of the hips when doing seated meditation? When I get up after 10 minutes, I'm almost stuck there. You probably just need a block, Des. Like, grab yourself a yoga block. That'll help. And then, so you probably start off with like a slightly higher one. Maybe you need two or three blocks, and you can progress your way down.
And that goes back to the mobility also, Ben. Des, you mentioned mobility work on just something as simple as doing what some people call 90-90s. Anything that works on the hip, hip hurdlers, things of that nature. Anything that, because, you know, we're a society, and it doesn't matter what level of athlete you are, a lot of people become shaped like their chairs. And especially for men, the external rotation is quite prevalent. So doing that hip work and improving that over time, not just for meditation, but improving overall in every area.
Yeah, Andrew's got me on the 90-90s and the hip airplane. So working on that, starting to feel better. So hopefully I can get comfortable there soon.
Anyone else have questions or thoughts or comments and feedback?
Mine's a little off topic here, but I know we've got some smart guys in here, probably guys with kids. I actually just found out I'm expecting my first child in November this year. And yeah, sure. I'm wondering if anybody in here has good book recommendations for somebody in my position, you know, what to expect or things to prepare for, or how to prepare mentally.
I mean, I got one. Are you married to your partner? Are you guys?
Yep.
Okay. Have you read Real Love by Greg Baer?
No.
Baer. That one's for me. And again, totally personal, but for me, the most impactful book I've read on relationships and parenting. And it's my most recommended book on relationships and parenting for sure. That one's awesome. You said
Baer?
Baer is his last name.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
You could try The Awakened Family. The Awakened by Dr. Shefali.
Shefali, she's great. What's really the lady? Like, she's on Huberman.
Thanks, Antonio.
Pleasure.
Ben, sorry, could you repeat that title, please?
Myself?
Yes, sir.
Real Love.
Thank you.
Who knows the lady who was just on Huberman, the parenting lady? What's her name? Becky Kennedy.
Dr. Becky Kennedy, yeah.
Yeah.
Being Dude. Good, I think, is the book.
Man, she's by far the best parenting expert I've come across yet. Dr. Shefali's all right. I actually was kind of infatuated with her when I first found her, but I've kind of realized it's not as great as I thought. But yeah, Becky Kennedy is unbelievable, man. She's great.
Perfect. Thanks.
And I'll say the best thing you all, one piece of advice I got recently was when you become a parent, love is spelled T-I-M-E. That's probably a good piece of advice to like melt into the back of your brain somewhere. And the best thing you can do for your kids is create a better relationship with your wife, right?
Great.
Phil Stutz, Andrew. Phil Stutz and Barry Michaels. There's only one T in his name. Sorry. It's very, very actionable. Very actionable. Really good book. He's been on my podcast.
Ben, Jen's, I've got one more question.
Go ahead, Keith.
I've got a long haul trip over to London. So Melbourne to London next week. So about 30 odd hours of travel, and just I know you spoke about it before, things to prioritize, obviously the simple things like water and hydration, but any kind of advice for optimum health hit to kind of hit the ground running when I land?
Well, the first thing I've been a big advocate of lately is I'm trying to get a really intense workout in before, like as soon as I can before I train. Like I'm literally training, showering at the gym, going straight to the airport. And the more you can use your legs, the better. So I'll either plan leg day or I'll plan like an hour or at least some really good intensity leg, like bike stuff. Cause like blood flow is just going to be so integral when you're sitting for that long. And then I'll try to schedule it about every 1 to 2 hours where I'm doing some preordained workout routine. Like I literally, the reason I was late for today's call, I literally just came straight from the airport. I was in Portugal. So yeah, I'm trying every hour to 2 hours, I'm doing something. And even if you're sitting, it's like calf raises, leg extensions, like trying to get the blood flow. It's just blood flow in your legs, man. So that from that perspective, supplementally, we're looking at molecular hydrogen being useful to take. So get molecular hydrogen pills. You can take one about every 2 hours, mix it in water, drink it down. That's going to be a great way to mitigate the oxidative stress. We also like taking about 400 milligrams of CoQ10 when you land. CoQ10 can really help manage the oxidative stress as well. And then depending what the travel schedule is like, I'll usually take some Phenibut and some magnesium threonate when I want to sleep on the plane. So I try to, as soon as I get on the plane, I usually haven't eaten, and I'll try to sleep as soon as I get on. So I'll try to get as much as I can. So if I'm fasted and I took 750 milligrams of Phenibut and 600 milligrams or 800 milligrams of magnesium threonate, I can usually get 6 to 8 hours of sleep on an airplane, which is, I've never done it before, but recently you could with that stack, I get great sleep. And then I can get up and do work the rest of the time because I'm well rested. Just make sure you tell whoever's like feeding you not to wake you up.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
I'm in Toronto now, Stevie. Yeah. I literally just came from the airport.
Yeah, we're flying in tomorrow.
Oh, sweet. That's great. Let's get together.
Definitely.
Any other questions, guys? Anyone want to share any wins from this week? Anything great going on in your life or in your training? Everyone's being all quiet.
Ben, yeah. Hey, this is wait, was that you, Mott? I don't want to cut you off, brother.
No, you go first, bro. For sure.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for showing up. Thanks for showing up, Michael.
You no worries, man. Hey, you know, funny thing is in my neighborhood over here in Louisiana, I'm the, come Halloween, I'm the neighborhood Michael Myers. So I don't know if this smartphone has picked up on that or not. but Mott, since you're on here, man, we were talking about your biceps at the beginning. I wanted to show you something. I think I got you running for you. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was just, that's an alligator head. Never mind. Sorry about that. I thought I had you beat, dude. I did want to share, I had a question to share for a win for me this week. Quickly, my son, I mentioned in last week's call, is 10 years old, heck of an athlete. His sister is 8 years old, and they are on board with whatever I'm doing. So the past two evenings I've got home from work, and they're waiting on me out in the backyard with sledgehammers, and tires, man. They're ready to go to work. And so the fact that we finally got that rolling as a family is a huge win. Huge win for us. I mean, we've done some things. It's been busy with sports and stuff this spring, but to see my 8 and 10 year olds flipping a tire pretty hard with sledgehammer was awesome, man. It was a big win. And I had a question on nutrition, because this doesn't happen often, but every now and then it does. When I like this past weekend, I was in a situation where I needed certain foods to hit macros. There was food provided, and it was more or less, we were watching the Kentucky Derby, and so it was a lot of snacky stuff. So cheeses, fruits, that kind of stuff, and starving to death. I was actually, the party was at our house, and so I'm hosting it, but I couldn't graciously sneak off and go have chicken and spinach. You know, I had to kind of stay and be with the group. So in those situations, so what I chose to do was just when I wanted something, I'd just grab a piece of fruit or something and try to make it through it. I didn't worry about trying to get off balance with proteins and all that with my macros. So just in that situation, when it's late in the day, I've got ground to make up to hit my calories, to hit my macros, but the food potential is not there. Is it better to just try to maintain the balance of my macros percentage wise, even if my calories are going to be lower? Or what's some advice? Like, how would you guys handle that?
Josh, it's a pretty nuanced question because it depends on a lot of factors. It depends on how great you are the rest of the week, right? If okay. 6 days a week, you're crushing it, then it doesn't really matter what you do on that seventh day to hit your macros. If you have a hard time being super accurate the other days, then it may matter a little bit more. It may also matter if you're building muscle or if you're losing fat. Yeah. You know, so there's some nuance to that question. I'd say in general, just plan. Like the more you plan, you're like, I know exactly what I'm eating. Like, it just simplifies, man. I always say, like, fill up on the great food and then eat a little bit of the other stuff left over. That's fine. But the more you plan ahead and actually have the foods you need, then the more you know you're going to win. Because I always say, man, at the end of the day, there's only one person that knows if you did your job, and the only one person that matters is you.
Right.
Like, you got to close your eyes and put your head down on your pillow at night. You know if you did your best or not. And does it matter if you screw up one day? Of course not. But unconsciously, if you hit it perfectly, you know you've succeeded.
I appreciate that. Yeah, and we stay pretty tight. And I mentioned my kids, especially my daughter, Piper. She's man. Dan is my coach, as you know. And she will rat me out like nobody's business if she catches me slipping. Yeah. The daddy, you know, so it's just this whole, you guys, this is awesome. I'm enjoying these calls so much. It's only my second one. Can't wait for more.
Thanks, Josh. It's awesome to have you guys. Richard, man, I want to thank you for being here as a staple. I appreciate you, man. Keep crushing it. Keith, same. All the familiar faces. I appreciate you guys all being here. Kurt, thank you for joining us today, man. I appreciate you. All right, gents, you guys have a great evening, and we will talk to you same time next week.